Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Archana Subramanian. I'm COO for the ANZ and ASEAN businesses out of Salesforce.
Archana, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. It's been a long time in the making. I'm glad we finally able to connect. Before we dive in and talk a little bit more about your current role at Salesforce, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Thank you for having me. I am sorry that it's taken us so long to get the timing right, but I'm glad to be here. I'm glad we're doing this. I grew up in India, and that's where I got my undergrad degree in computer engineering. And when I graduated out of engineering, I decided I wanted to be more business facing, and computer engineering wasn't necessarily where my heart was at. So I moved to the US and I went to business school in Indiana University and got my master's degree in information systems. And that was sort of the turning point of where my story changed and turned around. Was in consulting after that, graduating from business school. I was with Infosys Consulting. Did that for a couple of years. The travel was brutal. I lived in San Francisco, but I never really lived in San Francisco. All of my projects were on the East Coast. I started working at Salesforce about almost exactly 10 years ago at this point. Very different size and scale at the time. We were about 4,000, 5,000 employees, $1.5 billion in revenue. We were becoming more mature enterprise company at the time. And been really exciting ride so far. Grateful for all of the opportunities. Have done a variety of different roles, started in sales strategy, and have done various different sales support operations roles. I am currently the COO for our Australia, New Zealand, and ASEAN businesses based out of Sydney.
Wow, that's super exciting. And congratulations on all of the accomplishments in your past experience. And it seems like a very diverse background. Very excited to dive a little bit more into different segments of that. But before we do that, tell us a little bit more about your current role as a CEO for specific regions. What does that entail? What really falls under your purview?
Sure. So the way Salesforce is structured is we have what we call operating units. And so there's operating units of various sizes and regions and countries, and it's self-encompassed across sales, and all sales support functions, as well as distribution, broader distribution. So in the COO capacity, I report into the CEO of the operating unit, and I have responsibility over sales strategy and operations, sales programs, sales development, so inbound, outbound, as well as anything that touches the field, basically, is how I define it. COO titles are quite nebulous, so it is whatever you decide to make out of it, which I really enjoy.
Right, absolutely. No, thanks for shining a little bit of light from that perspective. In terms of the trends and ideas that you're very passionate about, something that you follow very closely, especially these days, just share with us some of the trends that are on your horizon that you think is kind of the next big thing.
I will say, and this is more broadly, of course, coming out of the pandemic or whatever stage of the pandemic we're in right now, the whole working model has changed. And there is such new thinking and fresh thinking on being able to work from anywhere, being able to access talent from anywhere in the globe. It almost evens the playing field when you consider diversity in terms of gender and race. And so I love that element of it. I'm very excited to see how that takes shape. I think it can open the horizons for more flexible working, part-time working that can bring different people into the workforce that we don't see right now. I'd say more from a geeky technology standpoint, I love seeing how companies are being more data-driven and the way we are able to take customers on a very personalized journey. And that's almost the expectation now. And so the more tools that we are able to provide with, you know, respecting privacy, et cetera, I think are going to be game changers where we're going. So that's the other piece that I've been following.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And you couldn't have set me up any better for the next question I want to ask you, is around a topic that I'm very passionate about, is around innovation. I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of executives at companies of various size, and everyone has their own strategies and views on building and fostering that culture of innovation. I realize it's a very loaded question. We could probably talk about this for the rest of the episode, but broadly speaking, just share your own perspectives on really how do you know, succeed in that space, helping your teams to be innovative, continue that innovation cycle.
So I'm very fortunate to work in a company like Salesforce, where innovation is one of our core values. Salesforce is almost synonymous with innovation. And so it's part of our culture and deeply embedded in our DNA. And I think, you know, a lot of the times things that are successful are what gets measured and rewarded. And so I think that makes it very important. So we're making sure that innovative ideas, there's room for it to grow and develop. And when we're questioning status quo, there isn't protection around it and it's rewarded, and those teams are celebrated. I also think that the way that I love developing a culture of innovation and fostering that within my own teams is creating cross-functional teams that are not necessarily part of regular organizational structures, but more people who don't work together on a day-to-day basis. So one, especially in the remote environment we're in, we put them on projects like that and they're solving some big hairy problem that we're dealing with at the time. It helps build relationships because you're not just networking and getting coffee for that sake. You're really working with someone outside of your day-to-day and getting to know other people. And ability to create more, bring more diverse perspectives to the table and think of solving a problem in an entirely different way. And that I've found to be really useful and productive because the ideas and outputs of teams like that often are completely out of the box and really, you know, push the boundaries on where our current thinking is. That's what's been working for me so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you from that perspective. And you've mentioned something that's very important as far as your teams. And as an executive at such a, you know, brand name organization as Salesforce, I would imagine that surrounding yourself with the top performers is at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. So share your practical recommendations, maybe some, you know, other strategies that really help you succeed when it comes to talent acquisition, and really, really bringing the top talent with very unique skill set that complement your teams.
So I think it's a great call out and a great question, especially right now where I feel like we're in this war for talent. The market's really popping and top talent is always in demand and it's never been more true than it is right now. Every interview, the way I treat interviews and when I'm in a recruiting cycle is I'm interviewing for candidates to see if they're going to be additive to my organization from perspective, from background, from values. But I'm also very aware that they're interviewing me for, is my organization, company, me personally going to be who they want to be surrounded by. And so I think it's so important to remember that and have that context, because I think we're past that point of the demand far outweighs the supply at this point for great talent. So that's the perspective I take. I definitely put in work to make sure that we're interviewing the right people, whether it's a good mix of passive candidates as well. So not just people who have reached out and have applied, but also people who we're tapping on the shoulder and we want to bring into our organization. So, because that's important to keep bringing top talent that may be completely happy in other companies, but could be such value add to our organization. That's largely the process I run. I look for, over the years, what I look for in candidates have evolved. I I largely interview now these days for the ability to think on their feet, being able to deal with ambiguity and grayness, change resilience, folks who can thrive in change. I mean, it's more important now than ever before. And coachability. I look to see if I ask a question, they answer, I coach in different ways to see if they can take that feedback and pivot in the conversation. All are great traits for folks to be successful overall.
Those are definitely interesting perspectives. And I love that you took the response in the direction of interviewing, because it's such an interesting space, which is very challenging to master, because the interviewing is a skill that it's a muscle that you develop as you interview more and more and more, which a lot of us probably don't do enough of. And I find that to be flawed for the most part, because it's a lot of the interviews are based on your personal past experience versus, you know, what is the strength that's missing on our team? And
Right. Instead,
a lot of interviews are focused on, is this the weakness that I can tolerate in that particular candidate? So those are just interesting observations that I love asking every single guest on the podcast. So when it comes to, you've mentioned war for talent out there is real, and which is absolutely true with everything shifting remote. And now, you know, competition is 10x because companies on a global scale are recruiting and offering great incentives for candidates to switch jobs. And, you know, the whole war on talent switches over to the next layer of war and retention. So for you to succeed in that space, to retain the top talent specifically to your teams, what are some of the things that really help you succeed in that space?
I think the way I see myself is more as shepherds of talent. Our paths up, anybody who works for me, I have the fortune to work with them for a period of time. And if I make an impact and the relationship is fruitful and working, it ends up being an extended period of time. But I know it's a finite period of time. And my goal is to make sure I'm creating an environment in my organization where they feel supported, they feel like there's someone, they're valued, they're growing, and really learning who they are and learning more about themselves through the process. And I'm largely interested in that individual's success and whether that success is in my organization, within the company, so in a different organization within the company, or sometimes even outside of the company. I'm okay with that because I know that ultimately that's what will create retention.
Right, absolutely. And it's, you know, the current times and conditions in the market really elevated that specific area with organizations just offering so many different opportunities. I think is just an interesting element when it comes to just overall the state of the workforce and current trends.
I also think that it's an interesting time where people are looking for, you know, really the purpose and the values of the company as well as the hiring manager that they're going to work for. It's no longer just the job or the compensation. I mean, those things are important, but if they don't really connect and feel like they know what this person or the company stands for and it's aligned with where they're coming from, I think we're going to find it hard to create that retention. We may be able to get those people, but longer term retention really depends on that.
And something that resonated so well in one of your responses when we were talking about talent acquisition is it's where when you interview folks, it's really an opportunity for them to interview you as well, which is rare in a sense to provide that opportunity for a candidate to really make that assessment. Is it, you know, are you the type of leader whom, you know, will help them succeed and get to the next level? Or is this the type of, you know, the culture of the team that will allow me to succeed from that perspective? So it's those things are very refreshing from a standpoint of really creating that two-way street conversation as part of the interview. So I think that's super exciting. So as you know, you being, you know, as a female executive in technology company, I'm sure, you know, you get your share of questions when it comes to diversity, inclusion, and things like that. So from your perspective, and good portion of our listeners are not only executives themselves, they're you know, they're early stage career professionals as well. And those that are just coming out of business schools, and you know, they the reason they love Ivy Podcast is because it provides them to hear directly from the practitioners in that space. In terms of speaking of another loaded question, if you were to give a recommendation to, let's say, a 21-year-old self when it comes to just entering the workforce based on what you know now, What are some of the things that really come to mind? What are some of the things that you can highlight from that perspective?
It is a lot of questions with lots of things to talk about. I think a couple of things that have been helpful for me is one, build relationships. And I don't mean just network, I mean really build relationships. Get to know people, be curious. And I guess in the words of Ted Lasso, be curious and not judgmental, and just really understand people, whether it's not just your org, but your peers, your cross-functional teams. Reach out to people for even a remote coffee. Honestly, I've been really impressed by a lot of young professionals recently who have reached out globally, because now I'm based in Sydney, to just get a cup of coffee virtually. It's easy to do. We can manage time zones. There's the hurdle of being in the same location is no longer there. And so it really does even the playing field and get to know people. And that, at the end of the day, everything is still relationships driven. And then let those relationships naturally blossom, as it may be, to mentors and champions and sponsors as time goes on, as they get to know you as well. So it's not forced. It's not a forced mentorship. You just have a board of people that you can ask questions to, get advice from, offer up your perspectives if they are dealing with things. And I think that's really been a key success factor for me. I think the other piece is, and more women and minority groups probably struggle with this, is with the confidence and the imposter syndrome. I think knowing that that exists and everybody feels it, and it, you know, as time goes on, it gets easier. But I'm always the person to raise my hand and say, I'll do the next project, and then go feverishly figure out how to do that project and or whatever I signed up for. Because you want people who are hungry and proactive, and that's what honestly makes successful people. So even if it's scary, raise your hands, keep your hand raised, and go take on that scary project because you figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that framework, and thank you for sharing that. And to take that a little bit further, when it comes to specific skill sets that are very hard to find these days, whether that's, you know, anything from technical or even soft skills, what are some of the things that you would recommend for early stage career professionals to invest in further?
I mean, technical skills, I would say being able to be comfortable reading data or being comfortable in data in general, I will say is irrespective of what field you're in, I think that's the world we're in. And you're just going to have a leg up in your ability to do that and be analytical. And the other one, second piece, is more related to my earlier comment, and softer and harder to grow, but it's the EQ piece, is emotional intelligence. How do you relate to people? Do you have respect and appreciation for where they may be coming from? Being able to walk in someone else's shoe, and having that collaborative mindset, that never goes out of fashion. And more, the more remote we get, I think that's going to be very important.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, absolutely. And, you know, remote work is here to stay, you know, in some shape or form. And a lot of companies have proven that, and with a lot of ambiguity in terms of moving forward, it's interesting to observe how companies hire when it comes to remote onboarding or virtual interviewing. But the biggest kind of, in the most interesting aspect for me, is when you're in a leadership position and you join an organization that's completely virtual. What are some of the things that you do to help transition with some of your top lieutenants when they join the teams? What are some of the recommendations that you provide to them for them to be able to even network internally, but in a completely remote and virtual capacity? What are some of the things that really kind of help your teams?
I mean, it's great timing, because I've actually just, I'm in the process of hiring a direct report, and she's a young executive, and she's going to onboard in an entirely virtual world. I think it's being intentional, not just learning the processes and structures and org charts of the company, but really understand the culture and the spirit of the company. And for that, it's going to be reaching out to a lot of people and asking questions to really understand and get to the next level of subtext and not just take surface answers. And I think there's a way to scale it. I love doing roundtables, you know, small groups of people, so you're able to get to a lot of the org more quickly at scale. And we do that globally as well. So you may be coming into an organization in one part of the company, but definitely make sure you're being intentional to get to know at least a handful of people globally. So you're getting a broader context of the company. And different tenure bands are also interesting. You want to ask, you know, meet people who've been here, there, who are employee number three, and someone who's just joined, and what that difference has been like.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's very challenging as well for folks, especially these days. Yes, there's a lot of benefits and advantages to working remotely, but that initial period, I think it's so important for companies to lay out that really the foundation for anyone joining the organization to succeed from the very first days, because, you know, there's so many challenges in terms of just reaching out proactively as a new employee and saying, yeah. Hey, I'm new here. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that? I think that just takes a little bit more from that kind of leadership nudging perspective to be able to do that.
Yeah, we do try and create an onboarding journey, if you will, for a lot of our new employees, and make sure a trailhead buddy, basically a trail guide to help shepherd through, someone who's been here, done that, and can make those introductions, so it's not a cold conversation. If you will. But again, I don't think that it still requires intentionality, and it's not comfortable still.
Right, absolutely. In terms of building that chemistry or collaboration aspects within your teams, or even, you know, maybe just with your direct reports in a remote capacity, I would imagine that adds another layer of complexity to be able to accomplish that. And we hear a lot about Zoom fatigues and all of that great stuff. How do you manage that? How do you succeed from that perspective to be able to bring the team cohesiveness together, build that chemistry without being too intrusive or kind of overbearing when it comes to just having the video on and simple things like that? Just share some thoughts from that perspective.
Yeah, I've done a couple of things, and, you know, it works over time. I've done this exercise with my directs, who are a new leadership team, entirely during the COVID pandemic, so entirely virtual. And it was an exercise on more value sharing. So talk about what my values are, why are they my values? How has my childhood or past history shaped that? What does it look like when my values are in conflict? And we go around the table and listen to that conversation. It is very different than, this is my background, this is was my previous job, this is where I went to school. It's a very different context that you're learning about your coworkers and colleagues. And it does help create a deeper understanding, and you know, you're able to understand what's important to them, why is it important to them? And when that's not fulfilled, how does it trigger? How does it show up? So I've seen that help build more chemistry and trust. And the other piece is, I used to do this thing called a wine and vent, which was, it was just for my leadership team. There was this hard period of time where the work is intense. It's a grind. There's a lot going on, Zoom fatigue. And we would have a standing meeting on Friday afternoons, and anyone who wants can join. And the goal is not to come up with productive solutions to anything. We can just vent and we drink wine or beer. And it is, I think, just being able to share that with the team. It's almost a water cooler environment, if you will. It's after work drinks, but it's just, even if it's with your boss, I have no intention that you have to come up with any productive solutions or that you can't whine. We can whine and it'll be totally fine. And that has actually also helped build more camaraderie among the team.
I like that. And it's actually not the first time I'm hearing something like this. I've recently interviewed an executive at Amazon, and she talked about a very similar, you know, exercise that she does with her team members when it comes to especially one-on-ones, where the focus is really anything but work, and to be able to have that open forum, open conversation. I think things like that, they matter. They seem to be cliche, but at the end of the day, in the world that we live in, those things that really matter. So that's very exciting to hear that. the kind of the last segment of each episode is what we call kind of a rapid fire heat check, where I ask you a question and you just come up with a response, a little bit of a, you know, the short version of what we've been talking about. Does that sound like a good idea?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Okay. As far as your content diet, besides books, what do you consume on a daily basis to really, you know, keep yourself, you know, the learning perspective from the things that you're very passionate about? Just share some of the sources that you consume.
I do read a lot, but outside of that, it has been enjoying a lot of podcasts more recently. And I was on vacation last week and I listened almost exclusively to Esther Perel, Brené Brown, and Adam Grant as I'm learning about languishing during the pandemic. So it's been great.
Yeah, that's great. Those are great recommendations. Definitely a fan as well. When it comes to books specifically, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
I actually just finished reading The Wolf Pack by Abby Wambach. And she had a version of it for young adults as well. And so my daughter and I read it together and it was great to be able to share that and, you know, she's 8 years old and have her ask questions because she lives in a very different world than I grew up in. And I love that. And I love that we're setting the tone for that generation. A book that I think always keeps on giving is The Five Dysfunctions of the Team. Every time I'm starting a new role, taking over a new team, I read this just as a refresher. I think it's very relevant and always resonates.
Those are great recommendations, especially the first one. I also have an 8-year-old, so I'm definitely going to run that experiment.
Highly recommend. Well.
and see how that works. So I'll keep you posted on that. As far as who do you consider your mentor, your guide, someone that you really admire, and why is that?
It's this person I worked for a long time at Salesforce. He's no longer with the company, but I think he will always be that person for me. His name is Andy Kofoid. I think we have a lot of shared values, and over the years, I have developed into the leader I am, and I've learned a lot more about myself through working for him. And that's quite a special skill that he brings. And even if he's not in my day-to-day anymore, I know that I can pick up the phone and call him, and he will give me undivided attention, and we'll talk through things, and he always has great perspective. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Last but not least, what is your go-to or toughest question that you love asking in the interviews?
I ask about what they are doing, the candidate is doing for their own career development, or what they're working on for their self-development. What I'm looking for is more self-awareness of their own gaps and how they're trying to figure out ways to fix that. It's surprising at how people struggle with that. It's always a good tell.
Well, that's great. So there's a little bit of insider information for anyone who's going to be in with Arch and I. You guys have a little bit of a head start. So you guys are welcome for that. Archana, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short and insightful conversation. You were very generous with your information that you shared. What I love doing with all of the guests on the podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit a conversation from a year ago and see if everything we've discussed still applies, still makes sense. So those are usually a lot of fun. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.